My next guest is Australian acting royalty. He's a Logie winner. You might remember him as Senior Constable Nick Schultz in a long-running Australian TV show called Blue Heelers. He played characters in A Country Practice, The Flying Doctors, Sea Change, Halifax, FP, Martial Law, Kath and Kim, and East West 101, to name just a few. Back in 2008, he starred in the TV movie The Informant as Richard Button, a family man who got roped into being an informant. In this scene, Button, his character, attempts to befriend narcotics trafficker Cameron Clifford, played by actor Matt Day, at a local gym to earn his trust.
XU1.
Sorry?
That's a Tirana XU1 club members match.
It is, mate. Well spotted. It is indeed. No, great cars, weren't they?
Legends. What colour's yours?
Mine. No, actually, I thought Flo'd mine. It was, his family. Wife.
Your wife made you sell your XU1.
Yes, my beloved did.
What a bitch.
Well, don't get married. That's my advice.
You're not, are you?
No.
That means you still got one.
A Tirana, yeah, not an XU1. I've got an A9X.
You got an A9X? Mate, you're a lucky man. I find that hard to believe, mate. That's the Brocky special, two-time winner of Bathurst. I only made a couple of hundred of them, mate. They're all museums somewhere.
405.
And you got one of them. A Fair Dinkum A9X, not a Mickey Mouse one. Radial chin suspension, Salisbury diff.
T10 gearbox.
LA white.
Flamenco red.
Mate, shake my hand, I'm Richard Button.
Cameron Clifford.
You've got an A9X. That's beautiful.
You've got an A9X. Back in 2011, our guest was the narrator on the controversial TV miniseries The Slap. And it's no wonder with this distinctive voice that he has. He's an actor, an author, two-time Logie winner for Most Outstanding Actor and an AFI Award for Best Actor in a Leading Role. William McGuinness, welcome to Go to Bed with a Celeb.
Walter, that's... I think more people have heard that than watched that.
Well,
how are you?
Good, mate. How's yourself? It's been a while.
I'm getting along. I'm okay.
That's good. I was reading one of your many books over the summer, so it's always good to pick up a William McGuinness book and have a read. It's a good summer read, your style of writing.
You're a very kind man, Walter.
Oh, mate, you've got to keep putting the money in the coffers for you.
You've got to pay those remaining school fees. Only 2 more years left of school fees, so.
Oh, aren't they expensive? We were talking about that earlier today. Apparently, if you, from day dot now, it's to put a child through school in Sydney will cost you $500,000.
Well, you know, a good kid will be a good kid, whatever school they go to, and I don't think anyone should ever be judged by what they sacrifice or what they pay. I mean, a lot of people send their kids to school and they just sacrifice so much, and hopefully the kids are aware of that. But ultimately, it's just a sign of everyone wanting the best for their kids, and that's all anyone ever wants.
Yeah. Well, your old school tie, at least in primary school, was a Queensland school, wasn't it?
It was indeed. It wasn't a Humpybong, which is, you know, it sounds like it's been made up.
It's real.
It was the first place of European settlement in Queensland.
Yeah.
And it basically means Indigenous for empty houses because they just got up and left and went to Brisbane.
Oh, really?
And I always thought that was sort of like a... It's not a great name for a school, you know, empty houses.
No, but it's a shame.
Must admit, old cock, that a lot of my education was spent on the verandas at primary school. And
why is that?
Well, I don't know. I was a bit of a buffhead, really.
Okay.
I've been touched by the luck of the Irish or whoever looks after us because I've done all right, but I'm...
You have?
I'm a bit of a plonker, quite frankly.
But Humpybong School has one of the best views of Moreton Bay.
Oh, yeah, you're not wrong. Yeah, it's just beachfront.
Really?
It's amazing.
Yeah. It's prime real estate.
North Stratty and Moreton Island and over to Bribie. It's beautiful. It was a great school. It was fantastic. It was, you know, when I grew up in the 70s, it was... my dad had this great thing about Queensland. He would say to us, we're years behind the rest of the country. And then he'd pause and we'd all look at him at the dinner table and he'd go, but we're light years ahead of it.
Mm.
But we thought that was fantastic. It didn't make it. He was just mucking around, but... It was just like, you know, days stretched forever. We just, you know, not everyone has a great childhood. Not everyone has great memories.
Mm.
But I, you know, there's nothing I can complain about. The way I was brought up in the family that I grew up in, and my parents were always very keen to make me understand that not everyone was as lucky as I was.
You would have been too young to have gone to school with the Bee Gees, wouldn't you?
No, but we knew they went to Humpy Pop. No, those guys, the Gibb brothers, they went to Scarborough. But the bloke who was in the Spiley films, I can't remember his name now. There was the drummer in the Bee Gees before they got rid of the drummer.
And sort of the George Best of that group. his name was.
What was his name? The Beatles, name was. He went to Humpy Bong. He was in the Smiley films, though.
Right.
Someone Patterson, I think his name was.
And by the way, not George Best, because that was a soccer player who liked to drink.
Everyone likes to drink, whether they like to admit it or not. As my father said, even the Pope has a drink when he's doing communion. Anyway, we won't go down that.
That's true, even when he's in the Philippines.
My word.
See, they had to get him out of there because he went over to try and help out and recognise all the people who'd been through the terrible disaster.
Yeah.
And then, unfortunately, another disaster sort of crept in and he had to leave because of it. The irony of life, William McGuinness.
Well, he's a good man, Frank, I think. He's a good man. He's a terrific figure, I think. He's full of compassion.
I don't think there's too many detractors of the new Pope, is there?
Well, he's a Jesuit, but we can't hold that against him.
Okay. William McGuinness, let's explore your bedroom for a moment.
My God, do you want to go there?
Yeah, well, I'm sorry, we have to go there. What is it, a king size or a double? Or
it's a king size double. I'm a big unit.
You are?
Yes.
As we've said before on this show, we've both been in the right paddocks.
We've been in good paddocks. We're leading the Royal Easter Show next year. You and me both. We're the grand champions.
That's true, mate. Well, you're very tall, so you'd need a king-size bed, wouldn't you?
I do. I like to start. Sleep is a wonderful thing, I think. I love sleeping.
Mm.
But bed's important. I had a friend who is a sort of well-known actress, and she said a bed is more important than a husband. And I said, why is that? She said, because you need to rely on the bed. She had about three husbands, but she was a cracker, yeah.
Oh, that's great. We can't reveal who that actress is.
No, I won't, but she's still up and around and doing well.
Oh, very good. She'll be in the next book.
Probably.
Even if it's a fictional one.
Oh, well, we can always use what we know in life to sort of make up a story.
Well, this is the beauty of being an author, isn't it? And with your bedroom, because this is all about going to bed with celeb.
Sure.
Do you have a darkened bedroom? Do you have blockout curtains and things like that?
No, I've got just those, I think most people have those blinds that you just roll down over the window. So
nice.
I do have a rather large Humphrey Bee Bear doll that sits somewhere in the bedroom. I don't know why, but it does.
A large Humphrey Bee Bear doll.
Not too large, but he's a respectable teddy. We're not talking your Artie Beats and teddies. We're talking more your hard-running Ron Coote, your second rowers, your Brian Nieblings, but he's good. He's just there. I don't know why. I've had him for years, but he's travelled the highways of life with me. So he sits there with his yellow boater hat on and his vest.
Well, you've been known to go to auction rooms.
I have, and I actually bought a Humphrey Bee Bear light, but this one was given to me, I think, for I've had him for years. I think it was given to me when I was about six or something.
Oh, fantastic. I've got to ask you if you have any electrical devices in your bedroom.
Well, that's a very personal question, and I don't want to reveal them. I know this is late-night radio, Walter, but it plays Advance Australia Fair, so I'm a patriot even when I'm...
Do you have a TV or...?
No, TV in bedrooms, no.
Yeah, it's a big no-no, isn't it? I used to, but I got rid of the TV.
Well,
hasn't improved things in the bedroom, but at least the TV's not there as a distraction.
Well, you know, when old Foxtel's got the game of the week on, it can sort of create all sorts of miracles. But I, I like it when I go I travel a bit. So when you're in a hotel room, I always like sort of TVs there, but not at home. No, I've got a. Well, like so many people, I've got my tablet there, my digital, my iPad or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
But I never watch anything on it. I listen to things. Like I used to love listening to music when I was a kid. Like, I can remember when I was 77 when I was 13. I can remember listening, going off to sleep. It's bizarre. What corner of my brain I've drawn this one, but I can remember listening and falling asleep to a Max Merritt song called Drifting Away From Me.
Beautiful song. Slipping Away.
Yeah, Slipping Away. Yeah. Amazing. And I used to love listening to the BBC World Service when I was a bit older.
Well, it's okay to have a radio in your bedroom.
Radio's okay. I've got a light for the book. I still have a clock. I trust my clock more than my phone.
Have you gone digital, by the way, with your radio?
No, it's a clock radio. Can you believe that?
It's got the old digits flop over, do they?
Yeah, I've had it for years. No, I keep my phone there as backup.
Okay.
But I it's terrible when you get. I hate getting that sound of a phone call in the middle of, especially when my phone quacks like a duck. You know, my kids, because I like birding, I like birds, so they changed the ringtone to a quack, to a duck quacking.
Yes.
It's bizarre.
It's entertaining. By the way, we've been corrected. Colin Peterson was the drummer
Colin
for the
Peterson,
Bee Gees.
That's right.
Yeah.
And he had Smiley. And he had Smiley Gets a Gun.
Mm.
And all I can tell you, if you ever see, I don't know what film it's in, the Leonard Teal of Homicide and Seven Little Australians fame in the class of 74, he was the teacher in one of the Smiley films. And it is one of the most bizarre scenes where he goes, and speaking of illnesses, I've got to go see how Granny Pearson's sciatica is going on. And he just walks out the class and disappears. It's insane.
Wow, that's a great impersonation of Leonard Teal, by the way.
Oh, Leonard was huge.
Yeah. When we come back from the break, we'll find out if there's a lava lamp and other things in the bedroom of actor William McGuinness tonight in Go to Bed with a Celeb.
Walter Williams. He sounds like Barry White's brother from another mother and another father.
Just before the break and Go to Bed with a Celeb with none other than actor, author, William McGuinness, we wanted
You're
to find
Barry
out...
Barry White's brother.
Do you like that?
Mate. Sounds unlimited. Mate, love unlimited. There you go.
Well, you got to give yourself a big G up. No lava lamp, is that right?
No, there are a couple of lava lamps in the home, but none for me. But... No, don't trust them.
Why not?
Well, anyone who's ever seen Krakatoa east of Java will never, ever trust a lava lamp.
And when it comes to going to bed,
yes.
What do you wear to bed? Are you a PJ guy?
I wear a codpiece, a mouth guard, and a decent, my Scarborough under 15 cricket cap.
All right. You're loyal to the very end, aren't you, William?
Well, I can't help myself. I don't move far from the old home, no matter where I travel.
How do you prepare for your bedtime? Do you have a shower, or what's the routine?
Well, I douse myself in essential oils and daub myself in... I don't know, I have a shower. I'm a typical Australian, might have to have a shower in the morning and a shower at night. And some nights, like Alcock, like yesterday...
Mm.
I've got a place down by the beach and I was painting a couple of rooms and I was exhausted because it was so friggin' hot.
Mm.
And I came home, had a nice meal with my daughter. My son was back down painting his room at the back and watched a bit of tennis. It was fantastic. And I thought, I got to go to bed. And it was one of those nights when you sort of, it's almost like you're sort of twinkling away like Fred Flintstone bowling, when he used to sort of run in to bowl the ball at the bowling alley.
Twinkle toes.
Twinkle toes. You think, I am going to sleep so well tonight. And you dive into the bed. That's exactly what I did. And I reckon I was asleep but it was a great night's sleep. Basically, I'd done some, I shifted my fat hairy ass around doing some manual labour, which, anyone who does that, man, my hat's off to them. It's bizarre because I remember my parents were both huge workers.
Mm.
And I think, look at myself.
You like a bit of hard yakka?
Well, I'm not saying I like hard yakka. Well, there's all sorts of hard yakka, but physical labour is something that if you really work hard at something over a prolonged period during a day, what sort of ponce do I sound like? And you just sort of feel, wow, that's so unusual because I'm not used to it. I mean, you know, I can go to the gym, or, well, you know, I'm as big as a bloody Mally Bull now, but, you know, you sort of think, I've actually used various parts of my body that didn't know existed, you know.
Yeah, and you find muscles you didn't know you had.
Yeah, and you just, yeah, I just beautiful. It was like diving into a pool. Wonderful.
Fantastic.
And I sort of, in a way, I think so many people used to sort of do that, I guess. They used to sort of work so hard, and they just had the sleep of a really well-earned sleep. But no, that was fantastic.
I couldn't
even stay up for Moncrief. The tennis, I love this time of the year because you always sort of get hooked into the tennis. It's an insomniac's delight because there's always going to be some match that goes on for longer than the 100 Years War.
Especially if Leighton Hewitt's involved.
Oh, get on, Leighton. You got to love him.
Oh, you do. He's a terrier.
He's like a little fox terrier.
Fox terriers.
Yeah.
They never give up.
No.
My very first dog was a fox terrier. What was your first dog?
Kelpie, and I've had Kelpies ever since.
Oh,
they're shocking dogs, but I love them. They're as silly as wheels, and but I love them. And I've had Kelpies all my life. It's terrible, really.
I've got to confess too, William. This is the first time I've gone to bed with a celeb who's a man.
Oh, really? Well, that's
it.
Look, it's new millennium. You know, you got to expand.
Yeah. New horizons. Career-wise at the get out the rainbows. How's the book going?
Good, I think. I don't want to sound like a ponce again, but no, it's good. I mean, it's not the greatest book that's ever been written, but I think it's the old holidays. I think, you know, even though we like to think there's a common Australian experience, you know, the longer our country evolves, and, I mean, personally, that's the great thing about Australia. As opposed to a lot of the rest of the world, it's constantly evolving, and it doesn't seem to worry that it's constantly evolving. And that's, I think, our great strength as a country and a society. So we're always changing. We're always sort of evolving and developing into a new sort of Australia. But I think the key thing about the holiday, you know, everyone knows what you mean when you say holidays. And I think there's that commonality of an Australian experience of celebrating those days when you just reward yourself for the rest of the year. And that's what holidays are like. And be they good, bad, indifferent, terrible, wonderful, whatever, everyone's experienced a holiday like that. So it was a fun book to write, and I'm glad people are liking it. And
a perfect holiday read.
Well, it is. It's funny that it came out around this time of the year, isn't it, really?
Yes. Oh, just total coincidence with the timing.
Yeah.
It's great. I like it. It gives us a chance to get nostalgic for train holidays and all that stuff. And the beautiful thing about your books is you make me laugh out loud. You always do that when we have a chat. But also your books, you make me laugh out loud. So if I'm in public and I'm reading one of your books down the beach, I'm in trouble because I'm laughing like a bloody hyena. Just fantastic.
Well, I'll take that as a compliment.
Yeah, take it as you will. William, we'll take a break and we'll talk some more with you in a moment.
Beautiful. Thanks, Walter.
William McGuinness, my special guest.
Warm, worldly, and wonderfully wicked. Walter Williams. He's all the W's and so much more.
We have William McGuinness with us today to go to bed with a celeb just 5 minutes away from the latest news. I can't believe the Sydney Morning Herald are doing that hatchet job on you with the article, Why Nobody Likes William McGuinness. I mean, we all love William McGuinness, don't we?
Well, no. What's that coot's name, old Alan Dale? He's all right. That was just funny because I was
David
saying
Dale.
David Dale. Alan Dale. I was thinking of Robin Hood, wasn't I? Alan Dale.
You weren't far wrong.
Oh, well. He's got an arrow and he knows how to use it. Didn't he play a lute, though? Oh, you know, shut up.
You're going to get worse press out of this, you know.
Because I was telling him that there were some people that just want to... I'm nobody, really, but I've been on the telly a couple of times, but some people just want to walk up to you and just give you both barrels I don't know, I don't mind. That's okay. I mean, I don't...
It's part of being a celebrity, unfortunately.
Well, I told my mum this, and she said, oh, come on, suck it up and wear it on the chin. You
suck it up, princess.
She said, you look at you. And I said, what do you mean? She said, you know, you're 15 and a half stone, you're as tall as a block of housing commission flats, and, you know, you look smug and well-fed. So just, you know, you're doing someone a public service. So I went, oh, okay. But it got to a point where I was playing golf once, and this bloke was, and I was playing like an absolute busted ass. And this guy, I thought he was looking for a ball, but he came over to, he crossed the fairway to come over to us, and he said, "You're William McGuinness." I said, "Yeah, you're that actor." And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "You're a shit actor." I said, "Well, watch this shot, mate. I'm not much better as a golfer."
Great comeback. Great comeback.
I just think my dad said, never, ever have tickets on yourself, ever. And I'm like, I don't know whether it's a defense mechanism, but, you know, I think that's where I told that to old David Dale. And
it's a great story. Thanks for sharing that with us on the radio tonight, too. Now, for those who know this part of your TV career, William McGuinness, you appeared on Kath and Kim a few times as a character called Sandy Freckle.
Freckle, yeah.
We've actually got some audio here of Kim introducing Sandy to his family.
G'day, Spunky Trunks. Alexander Freckle at your service. Kel, you sly dog, you didn't tell me she was such a looker.
Thank you, Sandy. I do go to trouble.
You look like trouble to me, hot stuff.
Sandy.
Hi, Sandy. I'm Sharon. Sharon Strzecki.
Hello.
And, Sandy, this is, this is...
Kim.
Kim!
My name is Kim.
I know, Kimmy. This is Sandy, Sandy Kim, my daughter.
Kim. Well, we better get a ring on. The Val Morgan ads wait for no man. You've still got it, haven't you, mate, eh?
The Val Morgan ads wait for no man. Oh, that's
love
beautiful.
I love Val Morgan ads. They're still around, you know.
Yeah, they've kind of changed their thing now. They're in shopping centres. They're everywhere. How about that character? Where did the name come from? Sandy Freckle.
Oh, I don't know. But
Dare I ask?
I think Glenn Robbins may have suggested the name because he came up with that line, "You're not a freckle, you're a mole." And honestly, Walter, I didn't know it was so popular because I don't watch much telly.
Yeah.
But I can remember going to the 2003 World... That's 12 years ago, man, the World Cup. I just got back in the country and I was off watching the quarterfinal between Ireland and Australia. And I suddenly realised, because I'm friends with Gina Riley, and I suddenly realised how popular the show was because all these Irish people were coming up to me and it was like, if you were Irish, it was like you were cast by the Central Casting Agency. All the girls were gorgeous. All the boys looked like Tyrone Power and all the old guys looked like Darby O'Gill, you know. And they were all coming up to me, "Do that thing with your mouth, son. Do that thing with your mouth. Go on, do that thing with your mouth, Sandy." And I thought, my God, this thing's global.
Yeah, this is massive. That's when you know you have broken through. You have made it as Sandy Freckle.
Yeah, but those girls are great. You know, they're fantastic.
Just quickly, before you leave us, any TV projects or other things on the go?
Got a couple of plays this year. Got a telly movie in the middle of the year. Got a new book. All sorts of things, really.
We'll have to talk again.
I'm a very lucky Ponce.
You are indeed. And next time you're in the studios, drop by and come and say hi to us.
Well, I promise I'll do that, and I'll bring my Humphrey Bear doll and my light.
Fantastic.
My Humphrey Bear light and my Humphrey Bear doll just for you, Walter.
Fantastic. Thanks, mate.
And my collection of Barry White records, just so I can see how you measure up against the great man.
Bring it. William McGuinness, thank you for going to bed with SLM. Thanks.